This is Jeff Phillips Weverson here with On the Brink Radio. I'd like to welcome a very legendary guest. His name is Clyde Graff, and it's been almost a decade since I learned of his beautiful work when I was actually here on Aotea, Great Barrier Island. And Clyde and his brother have, I mean, to make a long story short, they've done an incredible amount of educational work and activism and made a brilliant film about one of the most dangerous ecological and environmental catastrophes affecting New Zealand. And it's a very unique situation for what's happening in the whole world in terms of the human relationship with Mother Earth and our family of life. But I'll let Clyde tell you about it. But man, I really want to thank you, A, for all your amazing work far, far, far beyond the call of duty, and for taking the time to do this interview with me that I've wanted to do for the past 9 years.
Sorry it's taken so long, Jeff.
Oh, well, it's not like you haven't been sitting on your haunches waiting to you guys have been out there. Oh my God, the stuff that you guys have done, putting yourself and your lives and your livelihood on the line to do what you're doing.
Yeah, well, there's not much to thank for it. Quite a bit of negative response to that work, but we've been doing it for the last 12 years now, and we started with our first documentary called A Shadow of Doubt. And that took a soft look at the use of 1080 poison in New Zealand. And then we were filming in the Kaharangi National Park and came across a weka bird, native endemic bird, consuming a possum carcass. And that was really the inciting moment to produce Poisoning Paradise. And Poisoning Paradise won 4 international awards. We pulled no punches, and it was quite controversial because it really looked into the use of 1080 poison in New Zealand and exposed a lot of unknowns, and included scientists, doctors, farmers across the country.
It was
an eye-opener.
It was, and to me, and I want to thank you, you sent me several dozen copies of that DVD, which I sent out dutifully to all my network of contacts all over the world. And around that same time, being in touch with you and also really delving into the legacy of Rachel Carson, you know, who wrote Silent Spring back in the 1960s, that inspired me to create a major blog now called Rachel's Carson of Today. But so tell us exactly, what is 1080?
Well, 1080 is one of the world's most toxic poisons. And it's toxic when it's consumed. If it's quite stable. If it's sitting on your bench, it's no problem. But when it's consumed, it's metabolized into fluorocitrate. The body tries to break the poison down, and it hits cells and blocks the Krebs cycle. It's sort of more complicated than my way of explaining it. But there is no antidote. New Zealand uses over 80% of the world's supply. Currently, we're spreading across our forests and directly into water enough poison at 3 kilograms per hectare. That's enough to kill 100 people per hectare based on the government's warning label. So that's been updated recently, the toxicity. So the government's now declaring that it's more toxic than it previously stated. And so, as I said, we've produced two documentaries, full-length documentaries, but since then we've done a lot of work and put out a total of, 22 short films and documentaries on different aerial poison drops around the country. Each one has a new bit of information. We come across something new every time.
Yes, and I follow you, your
so
work.
So the poison itself, it also causes secondary poisoning in animals and birds that consume it and die. So if a carcass is left in the environment, it is toxic to anything that consumes it, including insects. And unfortunately in New Zealand, every possum, rat, deer, pig, bird, insect, whatever it is that is killed with the poison, is left to decompose in the forest or the waterways. None of them are collected. So it's one thing to poison the forest and the waterways with the bait, but then you get a secondary hit with the the toxic byproduct, if you like, or the decomposing targets.
Yes, I think that the concept of secondary poisoning is very important for people to understand, because in the oversimplified Orwellian world of today, a lot of people think that if something just didn't kill you outright, then it was okay. You know, like if you got a blast of nuclear radiation, or you drank some poison, or got exposed to a bunch of microwaves, or, you know, whatever, ate a bunch of genetically modified fish or something like that, that if it didn't just kill you right then you're fine. But that's not the case. You can be carrying around a massive burden of secondary poisoning. Wasn't there a scene in Poisoning Paradise where you showed a hunter that had killed a pheasant, and he went to cut it up, and it was all sort of rotted away on the inside from the poisoning, even though it was still flying around alive?
Now, what happened in that case was, and these are the unknowns about the poison, the pathways, the risks to people, to other wildlife. In this case, it was a pheasant, ringneck pheasant, and he'd shot it, so the pheasant was still alive. And he was going to just take the breast meat, as a lot of hunters do, but this time he decided to check the gizzard or the crop or whatever it was. And it turned out that it was full of 1080 poison bait. So the thing about 1080 is there's a latent period after an animal or bird or any organism eats it where it doesn't feel the effects of the poison for up to, or can be up to 3 hours. So the bird or the animal can go around consuming baits, more baits than are required to kill it, before it feels the effects of the poison. And that's quite important, because animals like deer, for example, could come across dozens of baits in theory in the forest, and it may only take 2 baits to kill a deer. So they could be consuming a lot more poison, and when they die, they become one big toxic bait.
Exactly.
And so there's risks, you see, with pathways, unknown pathways. And in the case of that bird, that guy could have eaten that meat, but without looking, knowing that the poison was in the animal.
Yes.
And have been poisoned himself.
Yes. But you mentioned before that the main way that 1080 works is it disrupts what's known as the Krebs cycle, which is a fundamental metabolic process that happens in the mitochondria, which are in... That's what creates the energy for every cell in our body. And in every larger life form, I believe... Every type of animal, all the way from the microscopic invertebrates, they all use the Krebs cycle because they all have mitochondria. And so we're talking about a poison that affects the whole web of life, really. I mean, in terms of the animal kingdom.
Yes, as Dr. Quinn Whiting O'Keefe states, everything from earthworms to elephants.
Yes. Now, let me ask you this. You gave me an estimate a few years ago on the total amount of 1080 that's been deployed in New Zealand. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I came out with, this is probably about 5 or 6 years ago, when I somehow concluded from what you had said, which I think was in tons, that it came out to be something like 200,000 kilograms of 1080 that had been deployed since like the late 1950s.
It's at the moment, the current rate is currently about 1 million hectares of forests are being poisoned every year in New Zealand, close to 1 million, it might be a bit less, but let's just work with 1 million hectares. And a current rate of, say, 2 kilograms of bait per hectare, it's been as high as 3 and it's been as high as 4 and whatever it is, but let's just say 2 kilograms of bait per hectare, 1 million hectares, so that's 2 million kilos of bait every year. That's enough poison to kill, well, if it was, I've worked it out to 3 kilograms per hectare, it would be enough to kill 100 million people. In Poisoning Paradise, it was stated enough to kill 20 million people. But at that time, the estimates were lower and the use of the poison was lower. Now, going by the government agency the government owns the factory that imports the poison and distributes it, and going by its own warning label, it states that just 30 grams of bait. 2.5 baits may kill an adult human, and that's 100 people per hectare.
Well, let me ask you this: How would Dr. Whiting O'Keefe define the difference between what's happening in New Zealand and covert chemical warfare? Is it really the same thing?
Well, I don't know. Everyone has their different views. I do know Dr. Whiting O'Keefe can't believe what's going on in New Zealand. He thinks it's one of the most ridiculous things he's ever encountered, I believe, he has stated. Some people, if you talk to some people, they say, argue that it is the equivalent of chemical warfare. It wouldn't be acceptable in any other country of the world where you can drop 1080 bait, very toxic loading, across land and water, indiscriminately, across all land and water, into people's drinking water included. That would be a crime in any other country of the world except New Zealand.
Absolutely. Well, isn't it actually banned in almost every country in the world, including in the United States, since the early 1970s because of its threat to human health? I mean, it's only used in New Zealand.
It's banned for use in many countries of the world, including the US, where it is used. Small amounts are used in sheep collars to kill coyote or to reduce the incidence of dog attacks, wild coyotes, etc. But it's a fraction of what they use here. According to Charles Wigley, the guy that produces the poison, in the US they use just 4 tablespoons. In New Zealand it's around 4 tons of pure poison. So, huge difference in the way it's used. It's banned for use because of its toxicity, because of its risk to wildlife, and to humans.
Yes. So, now, the figure of 4 tons that you just said, is that the annual use of the pure 1080 itself?
The annual use of America is just 4 tablespoons.
Yes.
Okay, a very small amount.
Yes.
4 tablespoons.
Yes.
And that's still enough to kill hundreds of people, but in New Zealand, it's 4 tons of pure poison around that figure.
And they're putting that much into the biosphere per year.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this. You said the company. Now, let me just go back a few years. When I very first came to New Zealand in the year 2000, the only person I knew here was a guy named Wade Doak, D-O-A-K. Did you ever hear of him?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
He was kind of like the Jacques Cousteau. He was like an oceanographer that lives up near up on the North Island. I went and saw him for a couple of days because we had been corresponding, and he's who first told me about 1080, and he described it as this miracle magic bullet compound that would just kill all the bad critters that they didn't want, like the possums and stuff, but it wouldn't hurt anything else. And I think he even had some little bait stations nailed to his trees and stuff like that. And he mentioned something dodgy about it, that he mentioned the name of a guy that was involved in the government at the time, and I believe his name was Bill Birch. Is that correct?
Rings a bell.
This guy had
some. I'm not certain on the guys that were involved earlier on, but
yeah,
it rings a bell.
But it had to do with a collusion between the companies that owned or imported it and the government agencies that were involved with dispersing. But you said now that the government owns the company that's manufacturing it? Isn't that in America?
Yeah, so if you visit www.tvwild.co.nz, that's TV and as in television, and then wild as in anything wild, .co.nz, there's information on that website that shows the government involvement in the poison factory. And yes, Aurelian.com is the new website, and it's a government state-owned enterprise, Aurelian, and or the factory that imports the poison. And the Minister of, I think, Finance and the Minister of perhaps Primary Industries are the two shareholders.
And what are their names?
The thing is, when the government changes hands, the shareholding changes hands to the new government.
Yes.
So it's not, it's the ministers that are the shareholders, positioned as the sitting shareholders, but it's not the actual people, if you like,
It's the office.
The way the company's set up. So it changes with each government.
Okay. That is very...
There's a conflict of interest in our opinion. You've got the government running this 1080 poisoning program, and they are also the ones funding the so-called research. They want the poison drop. They want to spread as much of this stuff across the country as possible. And so that's still that's the same crowd that are actually funding the research, etc. So we think there's just a bit of a conflict of interest in the way
I think
it's all panning out.
That's an understatement. Well, let me ask you this: Why do they want to do it? And let me just give you my perspective on all this. People, they're using the threat. It's in a way, it's kind of like the Muslim terrorists. It's like there's these evil invasive pests that are eating all the forests in New Zealand, the possums, and they're eating the eggs of the birds, and there's also the stoats and the weasels and stuff like that. But there are these evil animals that are just like wreaking all this havoc. So they're willing to go to incredible extremes to deploy a lethal pesticide that's banned everywhere else in the world, that's a threat to human health, in unbelievable quantities through the land and the air and the water, to kill the possums. But are the possums really as big of a threat as they're made out to be?
No, the answer to that is clearly no. We believe that even the Department of Conservation are quite aware that possums are no longer the big threat they were made out to be. We've always known they never were a big threat. Possums only have one young per year. Their breeding capabilities is slow. And the other thing is, there is a lot of hunters over here in New Zealand quite eager to find any forested area where there are too many possums, because they can go in and kill the possums and collect their fur and sell it, and the money's very good. So there is no excuse for eerily poisoning the possums. But the possums, I don't think, is the main reason now. They've switched to rats. The thing with 1080 poison, the worst thing you can do is to poison an ecosystem with 1080, because what it does is it kills things. But the first things to return are the rats, and then they go to plague proportions. And this is shown in scientific research over and over again, that that's exactly what happens. When you compare it to a forest that's never poisoned, a forest that's never poisoned has an ecosystem that's much more balanced. And we've been filming across New Zealand all over. We've filmed poison forests and we've filmed the non-poison forests. And the non-poison forests, we always find a greater diversity of bird life, a healthy forest, and one that just manages itself pretty much. As soon as you get into these poison forests, you get unbalance, you get rat plagues, then of course stoats and ferrets, they can actually increase as well, because there's more abundance of rats. And the whole system becomes unbalanced.
Yes. Well,
and other things like kiwi, we're finding native kiwi are being impacted largely and negatively with the aerial use of 1080.
And aren't a lot of kias being killed too?
Yes, kia parrots. Yes.
Yes.
Native parrot.
Well, let me ask you this: can't the rats over different generations of their breeding, can't they, if they're constantly exposed to this stuff, they can become resistant to it, can't they?
Well, there's research to show that rats can become resistant or become poison shy. It just depends, like you say, a rat's lifespan in the forest is quite short. It may only be 18 months in the wild. The aerial drops are taking place every 2 to 5 years. Most often it's every 3 years. And the argument is that, wow, you know, we've just done an aerial drop. In 2 years' time, the rats are in higher numbers, we've got to do another drop. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that they just keep poisoning into infinitum. So we argue, leave the forests alone to manage themselves, don't interfere, and you're far better off. And then you can just go in with specially targeted trapping or whatever they want to do if it's deemed required. But mass-scale poisoning just causes imbalance.
Yes. Well, would you say that greed is the central driving force behind this sort of insane drive to deploy all this poison? I mean, are they, through whatever convoluted means, are they, these government agencies and stuff, making a lot of money on this?
It's a hard one to know. There's a lot of money involved in it. It seems to be more, much more expensive than ground control work if you're playing just people on the ground.
Yes.
It's over $100 million a year, the pest industry. The industry itself is, well, even the Department of Conservation is reliant on pests to keep them in existence, in my opinion.
And they're certainly not conserving the pests.
It's almost like a religion now in New Zealand.
Isn't it?
The children are they're getting into schools now, these people, these pro-poison extremists, are getting into school and training kids that these pests are evil, as you were saying. They're not evil, they're just animals. And so it's becoming, it's quite scary, really, what they're doing.
Isn't it?
And their intention is to poison until 2050, predator-free 2050. And they're putting restrictions on people to even have cats now, and it's getting a little out of hand.
Yes. Well, look, let me go to the next level with this. This is stuff I've surely brought up with you before, but I've never had a chance to ask you about it. And we can first tie in with another one of the sort of the fairy tales associated with 1080 is the magic of what it breaks down into. I actually saw, maybe it was in your movie or somewhere else, I saw an advert that DOC, the Department of so-called conservation, which I think is quite Orwellian, but didn't they produce an advert that showed who was at the time a very famous All Blacks rugby player, and he was doing an advert, and he was eating a bag of salt and vinegar potato chips and saying that that's what 1080 broke down into in the environment, salt and vinegar.
There's a in our first documentary, A Shadow of Doubt, there's the one of the spokespersons for Forest and Bird. Forest and Bird's an advocacy group here in New Zealand that are meant to represent forests and birds and waterways. They actually support 1080 poison for whatever reason. That guy stated, and he had his little prop, which was a bag of salt and vinegar chips, and he said 1080 pretty much breaks down to salt and vinegar chips. And so that was just a propaganda piece.
Well, yeah, I mean, the implication
the issue here, Jeff, is 1080 poison, when it's metabolized, one of the main metabolites is fluorocitrate. Now, interestingly, in New Zealand, there is no test available for fluorocitrate. So animals and birds and even people that are poisoned secondarily may be poisoned by fluorocitrate, which is the metabolite of 1080 poison, sodium monofluoroacetate. And so there's no test available to identify what the poison was or what the diagnosis was. So that's a bit of a concern as well.
Yes. Well, let me share this with you. I've thought about it logically and from a purely chemical perspective. And ultimately, you know that a 1080 molecule by molecular weight is 24.5% fluorine. It's got your fluorine atom in there, which is the most active of all the halogens, along with iodine, bromine, and chlorine. You've got your fluorine atom, and then you've got a sodium atom, and then your hydrogens and carbons and stuff. But the fluorine is the main thing that gives it its kick, because fluorine, if you look at the history of fluorine, all your nerve gases from World War II and all this stuff, fluorine is central to all that stuff, because it'll react with anything, and elemental fluorine is itself neurotoxic. And so I've just realized that regardless of all the sort of intermediary metabolites and different sort of recombinations that the 1080 might form into as it breaks down, the simplest that it can break down into would be 24.5% fluorine for every amount of 1080. So that's whatever the amount of 1080 they've put out, a fourth of that is fluorine into the environment. And you know about how they've used fluoride, the fluoridation of drinking water.
Yes.
And the reasons behind that. It's not about tooth decay. No. It's psychological, neurophysiological effects of the fluorine. The neurotoxicity of the fluorine makes people dumb. makes people docile. And in my mind, I'm just going like, but look, could there be some kind of level of awareness of people, maybe from a higher level outside the New Zealand government or somewhere, that knows that the net result of all this 1080 is similar to the fluoridation of the biosphere? How about that? Could that be possible?
I don't know. I'm not quite that high thinking, but I do know they do put fluoride into drinking water to, they claim, to help children's teeth. It seems a bit extreme. It may also mask 1080 poison results. Goodness knows what it does. But all I've been doing is continuing to record, film, and let the public know a little bit more about the way it's used in New Zealand, because I think it's getting to the stage where the forests are becoming quite toxic.
And silent as well.
25 years of aerial operations.
They're becoming very silent.
There's been little incidents that point to perhaps a build-up of some sort. So
yes, the bioaccumulation.
Yeah, so it's possible, perhaps. The users and the scientists argue against that, saying that it breaks down. But what I don't think they're being quite open about is what it does it break down to.
Well, it can't go any simpler than the fluorine.
Right. And
the fluorine itself does these effects. But how many forests have you been in? And I'm imagining a lot. You've probably been all over both islands, but you've ever been in a forest where you'd think that it would be teeming with bird life, but yet it's almost totally silent?
I've been in forests where it is very quiet, poison forest, and you can have the same in non-poison forests. The thing about the 1080 is that Department of Conservation appear to use certain areas as advocacy areas, so they'll have specific forests like Otira or Whirinaki and even Poriora. But these forests are always what I'd class as podocarp forests, so they hold a lot of berries and good feed for food, good feed for birds, and so they use these forests to encourage people to sort of see the results of 1080 poisoning. But if you look deeper into it, you'll notice that there's certain species of birds that may be missing in those poison forests, and as opposed to the unpoisoned ones. So you can poison a forest, a good podocarp forest, year after year, and if you've got good feed in that forest, you'll still attract species of birds, especially nectar feeders or the berry feeders.
Yes.
But those are the species that are less impacted in the poison drop. So you've got to look a little deeper. You've got to look into the species that should be in that forest. And a lot of those other ones are like the omnivorous type, the kiwi, and even the carnivorous birds. Insectivorous as well.
Yes.
Because insects are impacted by the poison, and so are the insectivorous birds. So it's quite complex. But yes, we have been to forests that are quite quiet. But it's more about looking at the whole picture, the whole spectrum.
Yes.
There's a lot to it. You know,
absolutely.
It may be that some insects are missing. It may be that there's some reptiles that are not doing well in those poison forests. They're really not looking at the whole ecosystem.
Well,
cherry picking.
They wouldn't want to, because that might reveal the flaws in their whole process. But for example, some of those kias that were killed by the 1080, is there a way, or did someone analyze the bodies of the kias to actually determine if there was a residue of 1080 in there? Or does it, if an animal dies, and does it remain as 1080 in their body for very long?
There's research to show that a bird, if it died of 1080 poisoning, within 2 days of it actually dying, the 1080 may be undetectable, but it may not rule out that the cause of death was 1080. So the 1080 is insidious. It's very, it's hard to detect in some cases, and it just can disappear out of the carcass quite quickly.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. Do you know of where it originally came from? Because it goes back to like World War II, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's reported that even Hitler considered using it.
I saw that he wanted to put it in people's drinking water.
Yeah, well, water was the pathway that was considered the best, and because it would reach more people. In fact, I believe it was dropped because it was too inhumane. Interestingly, if you look around the world at the information on 1080, what you'll mostly see is do not put it anywhere near waterways. Even in the US, the US label says keep away from waterways. Even the New Zealand label says keep away from waterways. But when the aerial drops are undertaken, it's dropped deliberately into all waterways.
And hasn't they dropped it over water catchments of major areas like the Waitakeries and all different kind of places?
Not so much the Waitakeries, maybe years back. Now it's the Hunua, dams.
Yep.
So that's 60% of Auckland's water supply. I'm just about to upload a video clip to my Facebook page, Clyde Graff Facebook page, about the last aerial drop across the Hunuas. And so the public aren't even aware that there's poisons going into the water that feeds into the dams. Now, the authorities test the water, they claim, and they do all these tests. But, you know, it seems a bit odd to me. If you're putting that much poison in and you can't detect it in the water, there has to be a reason why you're not detecting it. It's either your methodology's wrong, you're testing at the wrong time, so your protocol's wrong, or you're just not trying to find it. So it's misleading to say that on one hand they haven't detected the poison in the water, but they're dropping it all through the waterways because their flight chart, toxin flight charts show it.
Exactly. Wasn't there something a few years ago about a company from Germany was importing some kind of agricultural products from New Zealand and they detected 1080 in it and they sent it back or there was something like that?
Not that rings a bell. There has been cases of suspected poisoning in wild game meat, for example, I believe, that may have been turned around at the border or not being able to leave the country.
Yes.
And cows have died, for example. The milk may have, you know, been processed, but they've so they had to put stops on things. And so there's a lot of incidents of poisoned animals, farm stock in the past.
Yes.
A lot of incidents of people's pet dogs being poisoned.
Yes.
But the thing that we've come across more recently is there was, for example, a family at Potaru who consumed a wild boar they were given, and they were all poisoned. Now, the doctors immediately said this looks like 1080 poisoning or pest control poisoning because it was a neurotoxin-type effect. The people were admitted to Waikato Hospital. The following day, politics seemed to come into play, and the diagnosis was changed from poisoning of a pest control poison to they changed it to botulism. And of course, the symptoms, none of the symptoms lined up to botulism. The symptoms were the opposite. But the story the whole way through for 3 weeks while these people were suffering in hospital and in coma, the botulism story stuck. So
yes.
There was resistance, even by officials in the medical, to allow a case of 1080 poisoning. And we sort of say, why is that? And it seems to be that the government is the one that wants to use the poison. They don't test, they rarely test kiwi that are dead in poison forests, very rare to test them for poisoning. And it's very rare to test humans for poisoning.
Yes.
Well, those three family members that were poisoned, the officials didn't test any of them for 18 days after they were admitted, and only then did they test for 1080 in their urine.
Yes. Well, it sounds
urine has to be tested within 8 hours.
Yes.
other ways the poison disappears.
Exactly. Well, do you think it could be by whoever? I'm guessing it was probably a German biological warfare chemist that designed this stuff in the very beginning. And it could be, if it was designed as a weapon, which is that's kind of the history of pesticides, is it came from nerve gas. It designed to be as a weapon so that it would actually change chemically so it couldn't be detected. After it did its job, then it changed into something else, so it was harder to know exactly what it was that had happened. But let me ask you this: is the amount, the regions that they're deploying, do they have sort of a circuit that they do all the national parks in different areas? They do them regularly, like maybe not every year, but every so often. But is the circle of regions that they're poisoning, is that expanding or growing as well?
Yes, so there's more and more virgin country being poisoned across the country. We think it's now over 65%, 70% of New Zealand forests are aerially poisoned on a rotational basis.
For real?
So the Hunua area was poisoned 3 years ago around the dams there. And I said back then, and it's in the video, historic video clip, I stated that the people can expect another aerial drop in about 2.5 to 3 years. And that's exactly what's happening. Here we are 3 years later. They argue because the pests are building up and whatever. Well, they probably are, because that's what happens when you poison a forest. You create plagues. But the point is, once it starts, it keeps going, rotation over and over again. And that happens all across the country, and more forests are being poisoned. So it's just a weird agenda.
Yes. Well, you know what? I thought of something else in some of the research I've done into radioactive toxicity. I learned that uranium is one of its properties, as they call it, a bone seeker, because it likes to go into people's bones. And the same thing with fluorine. Fluorine is also called a bone seeker, and it may be because it's got a special affinity for calcium, but that could be something to look for in the in the bones of anything that has bones, that's either dead from suspected 1080 or that's alive, that might be carrying around, you know, a secondary poisoning burden of it. It could be lodged in our bones.
Yes, I touched on something a little earlier, just regarding these little incidents of accumulation starting to pop up. And one of the things we're considering, if it was possible that these wild pigs in the forests, like the Poriora, which has been eerily poisoned 5 times, are starting to perhaps get a resistance to some degree, or retaining it, the poison in their bones. So there was a case just recently where two guys took their hunting dog into the forest. They shot a little pig, fed part of the pig and some bone to the dog, and within an hour the dog had symptoms of 1080 poisoning.
For real?
Not fatal.
Oh my God.
But showed all the symptoms, and they filmed it, and they've got some bone and meat left, and we're looking at getting that tested. But it occurred to me that it's a possibility that somehow the stuff is being retained in bones, because in lower doses, because just these incidents of poisonings, it's 18 months after the last aerial drop, so
yes,
it's quite a time frame.
Well, that sounds like a more, you know, I think that the way the biochemical systems work is they try to, the living systems try to bind this stuff up in the most stable way it can find. And a bone would be, you know, like would be sort of like if it could turn into rock or something like that. But the bone, the uptake, because it's alive. But that makes a lot of sense. That fits with one of the things I was already thinking.
Yeah, so it is an interesting thing. It needs to be investigated a little more. If it was found to be the case that because of the amount of poison being used in these forests repeatedly, you won't expect it to come out, though. You won't expect it to be admitted or accepted by authorities here, because the will to poison and the belief that it's such a great tool in this country.
It's our most important tool. It's our most
very hard to change.
It's the most valuable tool we have in our war against the pests. I've heard that before. It's such bullshit. What about Brodificum?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's another one. Okay. So Brodificum is not eerily used across the mainland of New Zealand yet. It's used in offshore island eradication projects. It is used in heavy, heavy doses. It's an anticoagulant. It's different to 1080. A lethal dose of 1080, there is no antidote. So if anything that has a lethal dose is dead on their feet. Brodificum, there is an antidote, vitamin K12 perhaps, vitamin K something. It causes bleeding. It's inhumane, grossly inhumane. And you can actually buy Brodificum at the local hardware store in New Zealand as rat bait. So a lot of people use it.
Yes.
And they don't really understand, they don't know the effects or the contamination that it can cause.
Yes.
The thing about Brodificum, it's quite persistent. So if it's used around farms and animals are detected with it, the farm's not allowed to sell any of their stock for 3 years. Department of Conservation, their policy is to not allow it to be used for possums, I assume because possums can eat too much of it and they become a large toxic bait for pigs or other scavengers. Can only be used for rats, and it can't be used where there's pigs. And of course there's a lot of pigs in New Zealand. So interestingly, Brodificum has been picked up in wild pigs recently. Auckland Council did a study, and 13 of 14 pigs that were tested contained Brodificum poison in their body, in their livers. And more recently, there's been some detections through MPI checking farm stock, etc., which I'm going to be putting a video clip about in the coming weeks.
Brodificum is based on the bromine atom, you know, which is a halogen, just like fluorine, iodine, and chlorine. But from the reading I was doing, bromine is, of all the halogens, bromine is the only one that has absolutely no place in biological systems, because fluorine, iodine, and chlorine all exist in living organisms in very tiny amounts, but not bromine. It doesn't exist at all. And there's just a little island off of Great Barrier here called Rakitu. And just 3 weeks ago, they dumped, my friend Tony Story has been monitoring this, and he said DOC rocked up with a barge of 1,000 kilograms of Brodificum to disperse in pellets over this relatively small little island that's got really, really steep, like 40 degree hillsides, and most of these baits were probably just going to roll right off into the ocean. Even though they say that it's not soluble in water, that doesn't mean that it's not going to affect what's in the water, right?
No, it's very, very toxic to aquatic life. There's a lot of cases of poisoned animals or fish or bird life following aerial Brodificum drops. One of the interesting ones was Rangitoto Island, just off Auckland.
Yes, I've been there.
You may remember back in 2009 or 2010 it was, and a bunch of pet dogs were dying on the beaches of Takapuna following that aerial drop. But once again, the decision was made to call that sea slug poisoning, not Brodificum poisoning. And so that was another case, in my opinion, of diverting the public's attention to the poisoning operation and trying to come up with something creative as another alternative to what really caused the poisoning.
What did they say?
Penguins that were poisoned as well.
Yes.
A lot of fish, dead fish. I think 8 dolphins or 5 dolphins, something like that, and a whale. And that's quite common. A lot of birds as well. Rangitoto, officially, there are 1,100 birds poisoned. I have the official documents from the Department of Conservation, which they revealed.
Wow.
So they did admit to, and they said that was a conservative estimate, a conservative count.
And what did they say caused it?
Pardon?
What did they say caused it? You said it a second ago.
So the bird, they accepted that the birds were poisoned by the Brodificum because they say that's acceptable,
yes,
to get some bikill. But interestingly, with Rangitoto Island, of the six or seven species of pests they were trying to kill, after the three aerial operations consecutively every week or so for three of them, that five of the pests were still in existence, and they had to use dogs and trapping and spotlighting to actually get those stragglers. So the poison on its own isn't enough to cause the eradication. There has to be men on the ground still going in to follow up, and that's if they actually do achieve eradication.
Well, in all of this, I mean, somebody's making money off of all this somewhere. It's just more business. It's like when someone gets cancer, they're then the fatted calf for the medical industry.
Yeah, well, you look at the operations on offshore islands around New Zealand, and there's been quite a lot done, and they claim the benefits. The most, I think, controversial one at the moment is the desire to poison Stewart Island, Rakiura, Stewart Island.
Haven't they already dropped a lot of 1080 there?
No, so Stewart Island's never had an aerial poisoning operation. Department of Conservation is starting to use 1080 in bags at some parts, small parts of the island, which are causing rat problems. But there has been no aerial operations across Stewart Island.
Really?
But there is a desire to do it by the poisoning, you know, the pro-poison guys. They wanted Brodificum. Now, Brodificum is very toxic to birds and kills a lot of kiwi. So if they did do it, you'd have large numbers of birds dead in that island, including kiwi.
Well, check this out. Back whenever you and I first got in touch, I was also inspired to contact this guy that lived on Lord Howe Island, because at that time, mm-hmm, I read, yeah, that the DEC, which is the New South Wales equivalent of DOC, they wanted to nuke Lord Howe Island with Brodificum, and they had a plan then. They were going to go around and catch all the animals that they wanted to save and put them in cages and take them away, but yet leave all the people there while they dropped all this stuff, telling the people that they would be fine. And somehow, and I actually rang up the dude that was talking about this in the newspaper, and I rang him up, and I forget his name, but he was the head of the harbor. He was the harbor master there, and he was from there. And he said, Jeff, sure, we've got a few rats, but they're not nearly as bad as they're making out, and there's no way that doing this poison drop has been justified. But I don't think they ever went ahead with that. Do you know if they did?
That was an interesting case. There was quite a bit of a, you know, public objection to it, and I don't think they have. I haven't heard any more about it, but that usually means that it's gone away for a while. So, but look, Jeff, I've got to sign off.
Well, look, can I just ask you?
It's been good chatting.
Yes, let me ask you one other question. Does it seem sometimes that the people here aren't quite as passionate about all this as they should be, given the facts, and even when they're presented with, for example, your awesome documentary films, which, by the way, I consider to be one of the best documentary films that I've ever seen, not only because of its content and subject matter, but because of how you made it, you know, and stuff like that. But does it seem like that the people don't care as much as they should?
That's how it was looking for the last 7 years, and then just more recently there seems to be a growing awareness. You know, we just keep pushing, everyone's doing a little bit. There seems to be a growing awareness now, and keep in mind that the government over here is the driving force behind the 1080 program, and they also have, I think, involvement with what's in the media. And so every week in the media in New Zealand you hear stories about how great 1080 is and how the birds are being saved, and it's week after week after week, programming, and people start to believe it after 20 years. And so it's very hard to get a point of view across because we don't have the funding. We don't have the funding to challenge it to the masses. And so that's part of the problem. But social media has been a great tool to help inform people. And people are, I think, starting to take notice now. Just this coming weekend in Parliament, Wellington, there's a protest happening, the hikoi of a poisoned nation. So you've got one guy walking from the South Island, bottom of the South Island, one guy walking from the top of the North, and they're walking all this way across the New Zealand and meeting in Parliament to have a get-together with all the people who are opposed and can make it down there. So we ask anyone that's listening, if you're able, get down there and support the hikoi of a poisoned nation and let Parliament know that we're not happy.
Yes. Well, do you have a website that people can look at?
Yes. Yes. So tvwild.co.nz.
Okay.
Is the website that we have at the moment, and has all our video clips on there. It has poison labels. It has flight charts. It's got a lot of information that people can look at about the poisoning of New Zealand that they won't see anywhere else.
Yes. Are you bringing in stuff about Broderfacoom and Roundup and Pendone and chloropyros? What, is that what that one? There's, I mean, how, do you know how many pesticides are being deployed in New Zealand now?
No, but there's thousands, I think.
Thousands?
The Environmental Protection Agency, which some call the Environmental Poisoning Agency, seems to be, you know, quite liberal on pesticide use in New Zealand.
Well, isn't it an oxymoron that New Zealand spends, correct me if I'm wrong, they spend tens of millions of dollars a year to broadcast to the world the 100% clean and green meme, but I've heard many years ago that mainly because of 1080, but all this other stuff and a combination of factors, that New Zealand actually has the highest per capita rate of pesticide use of any country in the world.
It wouldn't be surprising. We have high rates of cancer, too.
And that, well, you know what, Clyde, let me let you go, but I can't thank you enough for your brilliant work, but maybe we can do a follow-up, another one, one of these days, another interview. But look, anything I can do to help you in any way, just let me know, and I'll edit this show and use it as my On the Brink radio show for the next week or two. And so where are you off to do some kind of event right now?
No, I've got to go out to a do, but we've been presenting yesterday, and I've just got back from Australia. Went to the 1080 summit over there in Melbourne.
Oh, really?
It was great to visit Australia.
Oh, I love Australia.
And speak at that conference.
Wow, is there any video of this conference? Or is there video of this conference that I can see?
I think there is somewhere on Facebook. The 1080 summit in Melbourne, I think that's what you'd Google.
Okay.
Or search for. And it ran out of time, but I did manage to get a quick rave in at the end, a bit of a slideshow, so there might be some interesting information in it.
Is Whiting O'Keefe, or are they still helping you guys?
No, the O'Keefes, I think, have sort of
retired.
Got tired of the ignorance of the system, and they just can't believe it, so they've tended to back away more now.
Because they're Caltech scientists, which is very high level, and it wasn't their specialty actually studying the validity the validity of science.
Yes, so Quinn Whiting O'Keefe, his skills were to evaluate the validity of science and the structure of the way the research was designed. But he, you know, he's been, anyone that speaks out against 1080 poison in New Zealand pretty much gets smeared, ridiculed, and blacklisted. We're blacklisted. It's hard to pay the bills, I suppose, when you're going against the system.
Well, I think that ultimately Mother Earth, as the loving, intelligent being that she is, she knows who her children are that actually really love her. And so when it all comes down, I think that Mother Earth's going to take care of the people that are really living on the right path.
Well, that's good, Jeff. So on that note, we'll sign off.
Yes, man. Kia kaha, my brother. And go and have a bag of salt and vinegar potato chips.
next year.
Okay, man. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.